All right, everybody, welcome back. I trust you had a delicious lunch in a box. It's fine. It is what it is. These sessions are great, when particularly when we get a large user, Cassandra at large user, but particularly the Instagram one. And this is they've done this talk several times on .conk series, a committer. He's actively involved in the community. And this is a good chance to see sort of behind the curtains of what Cassandra can do on a big, big scale. So, well, we'd like these talks are really good. This one in particular, particularly with that Kong, is going to be awesome as well. So, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Nate, for introduction. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Apache Conference. So, my name is Deacon. Today, I will talk about how Cassandra serves Instagram at scale. So a quick introduction about myself. So I'm an Apache Cassandra committer, and currently I support the Cassandra engineering team at Instagram. And before that, I worked on another Apache project, HDFS, at Facebook Data Infra. So you are very welcome to follow my Instagram handle, where you will mostly see the pictures of I traveling with my family. So my talk today will contain like three parts. Firstly, I will talk about the usage and the deployment of Cassandra at Instagram with a few typical use cases. Secondly, I will show you some major improvements we have made to Cassandra in the last few years. Last but not least, we still have a lot of challenges to overcome, and I will talk a couple of them here. To many people, Instagram is a branch sharing app. It started back in 2010 and has grown, worldwide to be one of the largest visual media social platform, with more than 1 billion monthly active users that shared their lives on Instagram. So today, you can tell a story of your life on Instagram. You can communicate visually with your friends and watch TV as well on Instagram. So more than just a branch, you can explore about pretty much everything, ranging from animals, nature, to beauty and shopping. So at Instagram, besides leveraging the Facebook data infra, we also use a lot of open source technologies. And Apache Cassandra is a distributed database we're heavily using at Instagram. So let's take a look what are the features provided by Cassandra. So Apache Cassandra is a highly scalable partitioned data storage. So it provides high performance to applications, especially to write-heavy use cases. It also uses peer-to-peer replication architecture so that it can provide high availability with no single point of failures. So Cassandra is designed as a distributed system for deployments of large number of nodes across multiple data centers. And Cassandra does allow to make it as transparent as operating a single data center. So the native multi-data center support was one of the main reasons we introduced Cassandra to Instagram at the beginning. Another feature we love a lot is that a Cassandra client can talk to any node in the cluster. And that node will dispatch the request to the correct replicas. So Cassandra applications does not need to know how the data is sharded and distributed across the cluster. And also small amount of node failures are transparent to applications. So after hearing some key advantages of Cassandra technology, let's take a look how we use Cassandra at Instagram. So let's start with a brief history of Cassandra at Instagram. So back to 2013, we introduced Cassandra to Instagram for a couple of use cases, like fraud detection, inbox, etc. So the main motivation at that time was to replace Redis. So we were not very happy with the multi-data center support, and the memory constraint from Redis. So after about 1 year, we gained more experience and confidence with Cassandra. So we start to put more and more critical use cases on top of that, including like feed, direct message, etc. And in 2015, we had a round of consolidation of different storage systems within Instagram. So we deprecated some storage system like Postgres and moved more use cases to Facebook Tau and Cassandra as well. So after the consolidation, the demand for Cassandra storage increased rapidly, together with the overall growth of Instagram. And for the Cassandra team at Instagram, we also started to make more and more serious improvements to Cassandra itself, like the Cassandra on RocksDB and other improvements I will talk later in the second part of my talk. So here are some numbers about the deployment of Cassandra at Instagram. So we are running multiple Cassandra clusters with thousands of instances. We are serving hundreds of production use cases with tens of millions of QPS. We also deploy Cassandra in most of Facebook data center. So for the software, we're running Cassandra 3.0 with customized RocksDB-based storage engine. So for the next section, I will walk through some typical Cassandra use cases at Instagram. So for the first class of applications, they use Cassandra as a persisted metadata storage. So they store a list of metadata blobs associated with a key, and then do range query or point query to fetch the data from the storage. So here is an example schema. The partition key is usually some long integers, and the clustering key could be another integer ID, and the value is a blob. So Cassandra could provide very good read-write performance to this class of use cases. For the second class of applications, they use Cassandra as time series storage. So they store a list of activities in the database sorted by timestamp. So the example schema here is very similar to the previous one, except that we use a time UID as the clustering key, so that the data will be sorted by timestamp naturally inside Cassandra. So this class of use cases usually have high write throughput, which fits very well into Cassandra's strengths. For the third type of applications, they store distributed counters in the database. So this type of applications issue bump count or get count request to increment or fetch the counter values from the storage. As you can see, the schema here is very straightforward. The key is some big integer, and the value is a counter type in Cassandra. So those are the typical application data models we build on top of Cassandra at Instagram. So in this section, I will talk about how we access Cassandra. So as you all know, Cassandra provides its own query language called SQL. So SQL offers a model very close to SQL, in the sense that the data is put into tables containing rows of columns. So you can write a SQL to select the data from the table or insert the data into the table. And at Instagram, instead of exposing the raw SQL access to our product teams, we abstracted some common requirements and access patterns and provided high-level abstractions and also the storage APIs, which removed the burden of writing raw SQL from our product teams. Also at Facebook, we have engineers working in different languages on different runtimes, like Python, SHVM, C++, etc. So we provide the same set of APIs to the developers on different platforms. so that they can get consistent experience and do not need to learn any new APIs when they switch among the platforms. So a quick recap for the first part of my talk. So I have talked about what are the key features we enjoy from Cassandra, the history and the deployment of Cassandra within Instagram, some typical use cases, and also the common abstractions. For the second part of my talk, I will walk through some major improvements we have made to Cassandra, and also the management system around it. So in this section, you will hear improvements in five areas, and I will go through each of them. The first improvements I'm going to talk about is about Cassandra Pluggable Storage Engine. So in 2017, we started to work on an ambitious project to make Cassandra's storage engine to be pluggable, so that different developers can implement different type of storage engines to meet their own requirements. So this is an example Cassandra cluster I showed before. As you can see, there are multiple nodes in the cluster, and the data is distributed to all the nodes across the cluster. If we zoom into one single Cassandra server, as you can see, there exist different components. So these components are responsible for different functionalities in the database, from handling connections and replicating data to other nodes, to persist the data in SS table files on the disk. So today, the implementation of these components are not well modularized. So they are coupled with each other. As you know, Cassandra is a generic distributed database. But for different use cases and traffic patterns, the data is persisted and queried in the same way, which is not efficient enough. So we proposed to define an abstraction layer for Cassandra's storage engine. Again, so that developers can develop different types of storage engines for different requirements based on things like traffic patterns, performance, efficiency guarantees, feature size, etc. So here is the open source ticket we created a couple years ago. As you can see, it is still ongoing, and we are motivated to work together with the community to land this big effort. So at the meanwhile, at Instagram internally, we care about the performance and the tail latency a lot. So we developed a new storage engine for Cassandra on top of RocksDB, and we named it RocksCassandra. And by the way, RocksDB is another open source Apache license high performance embedded database. So last year, we open sourced the RocksCassandra and wrote a blog post about it. We also published some benchmark, which showed that it could support much higher throughput with almost flat tail latency. So Peng Chao also from Instagram, he gave a talk yesterday about the latest update of RocksCassandra. So you should reach out to him for more details. Another big project we worked on is to provide a global deployment and data partition solution for the data stored in Cassandra. So as you know, Instagram is a worldwide platform. So in order to provide a real-time and responsive user experience for all the users across the world, we replicate Cassandra's data to data centers across different regions, different continents. So let's take a look at how we deploy our Cassandra clusters. So when Instagram was first introduced to a handful of friends, the product required just one single data center to store all of its data in Cassandra. And as Instagram grew in popularity across the country, we expanded to another data center, this time on the opposite coast. At this point, the simple solution was to add the new data center to our replication strategy, which resulted in more replicas. So in 2018, we have been serving over 1 billion monthly active users from a number of data centers across the country. Again, the simple solution was to expand our replication to all the data centers. However, this simple strategy no longer works once we started to expand our deployment to different countries, different continents. So to explain why it does not work, let's simplify the deployment. So imagine we only have 3 data centers using a network replication strategy with replication factor equals to 1 in each data center. So if you expand the deployment to more data centers, you will be faced 2 main challenges. The first challenge is that the number of replicas is coupled with the number of data centers. So in this case, you went from 3 copies to 5 copies, and the problem will become worse as you expand further. The second challenge is that for consistent requests using quorum consistency level, those type of requests used to involve the response from 2 replicas geographically located close to each other. And now those same requests will require 3 replicas, which have negatively impacted to the performance. And even worse, the request from the other continent will require 3 replicas not geographically located close. So you need to pay even more, even higher latency cost across the ocean. So at the global scale, we began to think about how to store our data more efficiently. We break away from the strategy of duplicating our data everywhere, and instead we adopt a new strategy in which we will store the data close to the region where the traffic came from. So in this mindset, we began to treat individual data centers as a member of a larger geographic partitions. This means that if you have a user table, you would create one in the US partitions and one in the EU partition as well, with no overlapping of data across these 2 partitions. So at Facebook, we developed a new service that provides a data locality management layer between the client applications and the different distributed storage systems, and we call it Akio. So the Akio research paper was published at OSDI 2018, and you can read the details about it online. It is entitled, like, Sharding the Shards. So even we partition the user's data into multiple Cassandra partitions, still, at Instagram scale, we need to operate Cassandra clusters with more than 1,000 nodes in a single cluster. So in this section, I will explain our challenges with the gossip protocol and also the improvements we have done there. So as I talked before, so Cassandra is designed as a peer-to-peer system. So to make the system highly available and also to eliminate or reduce the hot pots across the cluster, the data has to be spread out across multiple nodes. So Cassandra uses consistent hashing and also virtual nodes to distribute the data, and to enable every node in the cluster to be aware of which node is responsible for which slice of data Cassandra uses gossip as the communication protocol between nodes. So Cassandra does not have a central place to hold the cluster information, so that every node needs to talk to each other. As you can imagine, all the nodes talk to one another. So there is a lot of communication happening in the cluster. And the gossip protocol is a method to resolve the communication chaos. So in Cassandra, when a node talks to another node, the node which is expected to respond not only needs to provide the information about itself, but also provides the information about all other nodes it had communicated with before. So through this process, the information can be propagated across the cluster efficiently. But still, as our cluster grows, the complexity of the communication also grows exponentially. The performance and the efficiency of gossip messaging handling process becomes more and more critical. So at Instagram, we have made lots of improvements to the gossip implementation in Cassandra to process different event messages more reliable and efficiently. So here are some open source patches we contributed to the community recently. One achievement after all the improvements we have done is that in our largest cluster with more than 1,000 nodes, we can speed up the Cassandra server startup time by 10 times. So which greatly improved the reliability of our cluster and also reduced our operational overhead. So besides all the core Cassandra development, we also created systems around Cassandra to improve our traffic management. So in this part, I will talk about a middle layer we created between Cassandra client and the server, which we call it Gateway. So this is the architecture we used at the very beginning. It was very simple. The Cassandra client can talk to any node in the cluster. That node will act as the coordinator and dispatch the traffic to the correct replicas. So after we run this model for a couple of years, we found that the coordinator logic can use a lot of resources on the machine and compete with other data processing processes like compression, read-write paths, etc. So to solve the problem, we introduced some dedicated proxy nodes into our architecture. So the proxy nodes, they run the same binary as our Cassandra data nodes. But we configure them to not store any data locally. In this case, their only responsibility was to coordinate and dispatch the client request. By doing this, we were able to separate the results used between dispatching request and handling the data on disk. We saw about 2x P99 latency drop after we introduced the proxy servers into our architecture. Then we run this new architecture for a couple years, and we find that the proxy is a very heavy process. It runs the same code as the Cassandra data node, but we only need a portion of the Cassandra functionalities there. And we also want to have more flexibility of controlling the traffic between client and server. So we developed our own gateway tier between client and the Cassandra cluster to replace the previous proxy tier. So the gateway is a Swift service, can serve requests from different languages. Internally, it translates the Swift request into SQL queries and send the query to Cassandra cluster through the Java Cassandra SQL driver. So we implemented the gateway as a fully async, stateless, and lightweight service, so that it uses minimal hardware resource and can scale independently from the Cassandra clusters. So we also implemented more traffic management features like scheduling, throttling, load balancing, etc. It gives us more flexibility of manipulate the traffic according to our requirements. So Mikhail from Instagram also gave a talk yesterday about more details about how we do the traffic management. And you should reach out to him if you want to know more details. The last improvements I'm going to talk about is to improve the manageability of our cluster. So as our Cassandra footprint grows, we do not want to burn our engineering resources on manual operational work. So we spend lots of effort to improve our management system to automate most of our daily operations. So one improvement we have done was to build our own control plane to manage our Cassandra clusters. So at a very high level, the control plane is a separate service from Cassandra. It will periodically pull cluster information from the Cassandra clusters, including the membership, token ownership, node healthiness information, etc. And then it will make decisions based on the information and also our maintenance requirements. Today, most of our node replacement and migration jobs can be automatically handled by our control plane. Our engineers do not need to spend their precious time on those type of operational work. And also we are working on to expand the coverage to more operations like cluster expansions, etc. The second big improvement is to improve Cassandra's disaster readiness. So at Facebook, we periodically take down one data center to simulate different disaster scenarios, like hurricane, earthquake, etc. And we do this kind of test very frequently. So to minimize the impact to our users' experience, we have improved our toolings around disabling the Cassandra instance in a whole data center for a certain period, and also the tools to restore the whole data center without affect the SLA to our customers. Okay, a recap for the second part. So I have talked about the improvements around pluggable storage engine, our Rockcenter project, the efficient global data partition, the gossip improvements to better handling large-scale Cassandra clusters, our gateway tier for traffic management, and the tooling to improve the manageability of our clusters. For the third part, I will present some major challenges we're facing, and we're evaluating different approaches to solve those problems. The first challenge is about strong, consistent membership management in Cassandra. So, as you know, Cassandra is a peer-to-peer distributed system. All the cluster membership and the token ownership information are also managed in a decentralized way through the gossip protocol, which caused quite a few challenges to us. The first challenge is that when we need to add a new node into the cluster, the new tokens are allocated on each individual new node with no global coordination. So in some edge cases, for example, there are multiple servers trying to join the cluster. Or in some cases, the gossip does not propagate all the token information everywhere. The token allocation algorithm could generate unevenly balanced tokens or even duplicate tokens, which is pretty bad. And also during the token management period, it's very tricky to provide a strong consistency guarantee during the whole process. Last but not least, it blocks us from running multiple operations in parallel. We have concerns about having multiple changes happening in the cluster at the same time. So in this case, it slows down our operational jobs. It's not a new problem. So there's already an open source ticket to discuss this issue and brainstorming different ideas about how to provide a strong, consistent membership and ownership management. The discussions started back to 2015, but still we do not have a good solution yet. So I will not get into details here, but Jay from Instagram also had a talk yesterday about this specific problem. And I encourage you to reach out to him to if you are interested in more details around this issue. So the second challenge I'm going to talk about is how to provide a global ordering of the data stored in Cassandra across different replicas. So at Instagram, we started to hear more and more requirements to connect the Cassandra database with other data systems, like data warehousing, memcache, secondary indexing, etc., so that our customers can either have the flexibility of running different types of queries and analyze the data stored in Cassandra, or to improve the performance when querying the Cassandra database. So given Cassandra's eventual consistency data model, one major challenge is about how to get a consistent view of the data stored in the database. As you know, when client sends the writes to the database, the Cassandra coordinator will replicate the data to all the replicas in parallel. And the client can specify how many responses it wants to wait. After that, the replication to the rest of the replicas will be handled in asynchronous way. As you can imagine, there's no single source of truth of the data. And on different replicas, the data may come in different order. And even worse, some pieces of the data may be missing on some replicas until you run the anti-entropy repairs to fix the inconsistency. It is still an open question, and there are different efforts in the community to try to address this problem. So for example, in Cassandra 3.0, there's a feature called CDC, which potentially can be used to dump Cassandra's data to other data storage systems. But you need to implement your own deduping logic on top of that, and it is still very hard to provide a consistent view of the data. We are still evaluating different options, and we are very, very welcome for any offline discussions. So that's all my talk today. I have talked about the Cassandra usage at Instagram, our major improvements in the last few years, and a couple of challenges we are trying to overcome. And now I'm open for questions. Any questions? Yeah, please.
So you talked about global partitioning, but it's basically kind of like a horizontal partition. But with that, how do you guarantee the disaster resilience? I mean, you have data on one single data center.
Yeah, so each partition is actually like multiple regions. So as I mentioned, basically we treat individual data center or region as a member of a larger graphic partitions. So even though I said we have one US partition, one EU partition, but within each partition there are more than three data centers, we can still tolerate at any time we can take down one data center, and it shouldn't have no impact to our applications.
And second question regarding the gateway layer.
Yeah.
So besides the traffic shadowing and slaughtering, does it actually give you any performance benefit at all?
I think performance is not our motivation to introduce the gateway tier. So I think there are two main motivations. One is like it's easier for us to control the traffic. The second major motivation is that we can provide the same API to, you know, like our applications in different languages. So basically they do not need to implement some, you know, like heavy client for each language.
Yeah, similar question. So you had before the
Factory
proxy node. Yeah. So
can you
elaborate how you set it up? Just
without Windows or? Yeah. So there's it's actually is very simple. Like there's a config called join ring. So if you set that config to be false, it will not join the ring, which means like there will be no token allocated to the proxy node. But still, like proxy node is part of the cluster, which means it still can gossip with other, you know, like other proxy nodes or other data nodes. It still, you know, can receive the latest cluster status or the membership informations. So we replace proxy nodes by gateway tier for two main reasons. One is that, like, as I mentioned, like proxy is basically it runs the same binary as the data node. So it's a very heavy process, and we do not need to, I mean, we need to allocate bigger hardware for running the proxy nodes. So moving from proxy to gateway is a very efficiency-driven effort, so that we can use smaller instance to run a gateway, but not the bigger instance for the proxy tier. The second is that, like, for gateway tier, like, for the implementation, like, it's very lightweight. Basically, like, it's very easy for us to modify, to improve. We can keep improving the implementation of the gateway. But as you can imagine, like, try to, you know, like, it's very hard to have a very quick iteration on the Cassandra code base.
I think when you presented earlier about the positions of your clusters, one of the things that you think you mentioned was that the first cluster where host data would be sent was based on the position of the user. Why was that the decision as opposed to where the user's account or the user's principal location would be?
The actual implementation is much more complicated than, you know, like what I presented here. So as you can imagine, like we have, you know, the AQL is the service layer, so it has different policies. For example, like you can specify, basically it can track what's the history of your request, like where does your request come from, and you can specify how to make decisions based on those you know, information, those logging. Again, like, it's probably not easy for me to explain, you know, all the details, but we published the paper, and you can find a lot of details, especially how the AQL is worked with Cassandra, like, in this paper. Yeah, but TLDR is that, like, we will look at different signals and make, you know, decisions based on different signals.
So in that configuration, though, like, if we assume that, like, I don't know, I'm American, but I'm in Europe posting something, right?
Yeah.
The principal location of the consumers in my post would probably be closer to, like, where I'm from in the States, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how much lag would there be between when that host data would be replicated back from the position of where I'm hosting to where my intended consumers would actually have the ability to consume it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think no matter, like, so the migration is or the replication is an offline process, which means, like, you know, no matter your data is in US or EU region, you can still access it at any time, just whether you need to pay the cross-ocean latency or not. And how to and when to migrate the data is also configurable. So in our case, it may take between like 1 hour to like a few hours, you know, like in this time window to trigger the migration. You know, depend on, like, again, depend on the capacity of the system, depend on how many migrations you need to trigger at the same time. But it will not affect your the availability of the data. It just affect, you know, like, the whether you need to pay, I mean, for our backend, whether we need to pay the cross-ocean latency or not.
Yeah. Are there any plans to, like, open source parts of the gateway layer? And as a follow-up question, does it make sense to use the gateway layer to implement any kind of automatic concurrency for, is there, like, a potential for a use case for that? Does it make sense because of
that? Yeah, good question. So, yesterday, yeah, someone also asked whether we have the plan to open source gateway. So I think at this point, like, we can, I mean, definitely, like, there's opportunities to open source the gateway, because the idea is very straightforward. Like, you know, try to translate Swift request to SQL request and try to add different load balancings. So currently, the implementation-wise, we use some Facebook, you know, like libraries or some Facebook frameworks. So we need to take some time to decouple or make them, you know, like pluggable, so that for people outside of Facebook can also get a benefit from the gateway. For the second question, yes, potentially, like, we can implement more complicated, like, request coordination logic or even transaction logic inside the gateway, because, you know, gateway sits on top of multiple Cassandra clusters. So definitely that's opportunities to put more, you know, like, complicated logic in the gateway.
I'm curious, it seems like quite a big architectural change from the standard Cassandra model where all nodes are equal. Mm-hmm. Can you say what the implication is for scalability and availability by having the gateway nodes in front?
So for the gateway, let me switch to the slides. Yeah, so for the gateway tier, as you can see, like, it sits on top of Cassandra. And yes, it changes our deployment architecture, but it is not part of Cassandra, for example, like, which means, like, it will not affect the, I mean, the Cassandra cluster still manages its own availability, performance, etc. So the gateway tier, like, it can, I think one benefit, like, we enjoy a lot is that it's a fully async tier, because, you know, like, for Cassandra, it's not fully async. So sometimes the traffic, the request, some slow request can cause the whole process being blocked and affect our applications. So in this case, like, because we have a fully async Cassandra gateway, actually, like, it helps us to, you know, like, isolate some slow request.
Right, how do you decide how many resources to allocate
the gateway?
How
many resources?
Values of gateway,
like,
how do you manage that?
Yes, so in Facebook, like, we do not use Kubernetes, things like that, but we have our own, you know, like, deployment systems, which called Topware. I believe it's also, I mean, it's not open source, but Facebook also talked about that. So basically, like, as you can imagine, like, every type of service here are running in some, you know, dedicated Topware job, so that, you know, each job will maintain its own healthiness, like, especially for gateway, it's stateless. It's very easy to replace some bad nodes, like, I mean, you can imagine, like, you can just think of, we run each of these in Kubernetes, things like that. Cool. Any more questions? Cool. Yeah, thank you again for coming to the talk.